Okay, hello you guys. We are back for another episode of the Huddle Up podcast. We think it's week 8. We're not really sure. Week 8 or week 9 for our podcast. I'm here with Jake Byrne and Nicole Beckelman, and I am so excited to talk about Super Bowl 55 recap. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. I made my prediction. I wrote down, I thought it was going to be Chiefs 34 and Tampa Bay 24 with the GOAT Tom Brady. I was incredibly wrong, super far off. So how did you guys expect that game to go, and what do you think about it?
Nicole, I'll let you go first on this one because I know you got a great take.
This is the worst Super Bowl I think I've ever watched. First of all, the game just sucked. It wasn't even a fun game to watch because I don't want to see Tom Brady win another freaking Super Bowl, which he did. And the game wasn't even close. It wasn't even a good game. It was boring. The commercials sucked. The halftime performance sucked.
Okay, I actually everything, like the halftime
performance. It was a waste of 4 hours of my life. And then I was angry after. And I was tired and I had homework. So I'm just overall upset. Tom Brady is the GOAT. He is a great player, but I still don't like him.
I don't agree with the reasons that you hate him. The cheating thing alone is like, that wasn't even necessarily 100% true. But first of all, the Patriots-Rams Super Bowl was the worst Super Bowl ever. That was only 16 points combined scoring. At least this one had points, okay?
That's true.
That's first of all. And secondly, I totally saw this coming. I'm a genius. I predicted this last week, so everybody can thank me for that correct prediction.
Okay,
there.
Okay, totally saw this coming. Back and remember when Jake said the Tampa Bay ship was sinking? Remember that?
Hey, the ship sailed last weekend, I guess.
As far as this game went, yes, I did not see the Chiefs getting blown out. I think if we all thought one team was going to get blown out in this game, it would have been Tampa Bay. But there were so many things going in this game that were going Tampa Bay's way. And then when we get into the game, everything went Tampa Bay's way. Nothing went Kansas City's way whatsoever. And we talked about dominating the line of the scrimmage, and that's one of the big keys to success for who likely wins the game. That was exactly the key for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And last year we had 49ers Chiefs, and 49ers dominated the line of scrimmage for three quarters. Final quarter, it was all Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes broke contain. Did his Patrick Mahomes thing outside the pocket. This time, you did not see any of that. And the Buccaneers had a great game plan coming into this. Todd Bowles did an incredible job, defense coordinator. You know, two high safeties, took away the big plays from Tyreek Hill. He was not going to get burnt on big plays because it only takes a handful of those before it's over and the Chiefs have that win wrapped up. So he didn't allow any of those. Tyreek almost never got going. And I think he was frustrated. I think and it made the Chiefs impatient. That's the key to success. Play soft, zone coverage, two high safeties. Make them be patient and take what's underneath and what they give you. Kansas City didn't do that. And even so, like even coming out of the second half, Andy Reid did not make any offensive adjustments almost whatsoever to account for that pass rush and get that quick passing game going that we saw what that was so successful against Buffalo last week, 2 weeks ago in the conference championship game.
Do you think if the Chiefs O-line was all healthy, you think the end result would have been a little different?
It's tough to say. Now, I mean, if Andy Reid – I'm going to say no. Because, I don't know, Andy Reid just did not – Andy Reid, like, didn't come to play figuratively. Like, he just was not the coach that we had seen – the entire season leading up to the Super Bowl. Like,
okay, but I also don't think Andy Reid knew, like, the Bucs defense would come out that strong. I feel like he was like, oh, I'll just let Mahomes do his thing. And then Mahomes ended up running, I think it was, like, 495 yards before getting, like, sacked or actually trying to throw a pass that was incomplete.
Yeah. Well, that Chiefs interior offensive line was not a great unit coming into the season, and it wasn't necessarily throughout the season. And they couldn't get the run game going. Tampa Bay's four starters on the defensive line made sure that they would not get beat by the run. Kansas City was not able to run the football whatsoever. And Le'Veon Bell was – I don't even know if he was available for this game. But he like they could not lean on Le'Veon. I don't know if it was because he wasn't healthy, so they didn't play him. But I don't remember Le'Veon Bell getting mentioned whatsoever in the Super Bowl. And I thought they really could have used him. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, even in the passing game, they didn't get Clyde Edwards-Helaire going and no run game still. So I don't know. It was very Patrick Mahomes-centric. And when the offensive line looked that bad, it usually is not going to turn out well. And overall, just Tampa Bay put together a complete performance. They had to, and they did it. They did everything right. They got turnovers. They were aggressive. They absolutely executed their game plan. I was really impressed with how Tampa Bay came into this game so focused and how they executed the game plan.
Well, Nicole, also to answer that question really quickly for you too, when you pick apart what the Bucs defense did in that game, they were known for the past of the regular season to be heavy on the blitz, but they only blitzed for about 10% of their defensive plays, which means they double coveraged all of like the wide receivers for the Chiefs. So again, just like Jake is saying, the Chiefs didn't make any adjustments, but also it was how the Bucs were able to not just put pressure on Mahomes a little bit of the time, but they were able to just double coverage the rest of the players that's why we saw Mahomes scrambling a lot too, because I mean, he's going to be in the pocket for a long time. There's no one to throw to. So I think, yes, Tom Brady is the GOAT, but I, like we've talked about the past 5 minutes, but the win goes to the defense of the Bucs. Definitely.
I mean, it showed how many flaws there really was with the Chiefs, and not having their two starting offensive tackles did not help whatsoever, especially against JPP and Shaq Barrett. Shaq Barrett had a great season. It was sack leader in 2019. And yeah, that Bucs D, Devin White, some people thought he should have got Super Bowl MVP. And I don't know necessarily if he should have. I think if you could, I would have given it to the entire defensive unit, because that team, that whole defense played phenomenal top to bottom. And so, yeah, I don't know. All I can say is congratulations to the Bucs.
But did you guys see today Tom Brady celebrating and Gronk on their ships in Tampa Bay? That was so funny. Tom Brady he needed someone to help him walk away because he was so drunk. I was like, oh no.
It's like COVID doesn't exist in Florida.
Yeah, yeah. That just makes sense for Florida. Florida people.
Hey man. All I know is those boats were socially distanced to some degree. Those boats were distanced.
So to some degree.
That's all I'm gonna say. So they there was some protocols, not a ton, but some protocols were in place.
Kind of segueing on to our next topic, I keep seeing all these things about Russell Wilson maybe wanting to leave the Seahawks because of how many times he's getting sacked. And after under all the comments under all those posts, they're like, "That's what Mahomes went through for one game. Like, this is what Russ goes through every game." Yeah. I just find that funny. I'm like, it's true. But the thing about Mahomes is it's really fun to watch Russell Wilson when he does it, because sometimes he like gets away, I'd say like 80% of the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he does it. Mahomes, I feel like he wasn't really used to scrambling and running around for his life like Wilson is. With that said, he did like, as he was going down, he did like throw some really nice passes, but I thought that was kind of a funny little comment. Everyone's like comparing Wilson to Mahomes in the Super Bowl. I'm like, yeah, well, for a Seahawks fan, that's what we go through every week.
Exactly. Yeah. And well, Russell, I mean, he was quoted by saying he's frustrated with getting hit too much. He's been sacked 400 times in his career, which is 400 times too many.
397.
Oh, okay. Almost 400, which is still 397 too many. So yes, you can blame it on the O-line. But what I think is so interesting about Russell Wilson bringing up these comments is he's stating that he wants to have more say in the personnel on the team. And a big part of the NFL franchise, like both AFC and NFC, is I feel like the players don't really get that much say in who gets put on the team, where they go, unless you're superstar power like Tom Brady, who was just like, hey, Gronk, come with me. So speaking about Russell Wilson, him making those comments, people were like, is he going to leave Seattle? Obviously not. That's not going to happen. But then detouring into Deshaun Watson, because I've seen so much information, Deshaun Watson, he wants to leave the Texans, but they won't let him. So how do you guys think this deal is going to trade out? Because he is a high quantity right now. I think he's going for like $70 million and like 3 first rounds, something like that. So do you think he's going to be able to get out of Houston?
Yeah. At the bottom line is these players make so much money. If they don't want to play somewhere, they're not going to play somewhere, or they're going to hold out during the preseason until he gets traded. I think he's definitely going to go somewhere. The question is, where? Now, I really hope he does not go to the 49ers, because I think if he did, that would automatically make the Niners like a Super Bowl contender. They would have a stupid good offense, a mobile quarterback. It would be great for their team. So I'm praying that they stick with cute Jimmy G and they don't fight for Deshaun.
Jake shaking his head.
Jimmy G you've seen what he brings to the table, and that is not enough for Kyle Shanahan.
And which is fine with me.
I mean, he's not exactly a precision passer with limited mobility like Tom Brady. Like, at least Tom Brady is almost always making the right decisions and putting the ball on target. Like, Jimmy G isn't always consistently doing that. And at this point, like, I think they've seen enough, but I'm not sure the 49ers are going to be committed to being that aggressive and trading multiple first-round picks to the Texans for Deshaun Watson, because they really value their first-round picks. They've actually dealt guys out for first-round picks rather than getting hyper-aggressive and trading four-star talent. So I'm not sure it's a move the 49ers would do, and I kind of feel like Deshaun Watson would be a luxury good in that offense because he's so – because of his mobility and the things he can do outside the pocket. Like, that's not necessarily what the 49ers need. The 49ers needed a Matthew Stafford, a guy who could just be competent enough, make the right decisions, take what the defense gives him, and be an accurate quarterback from the pocket. So now the 49ers, I don't know, they got to make a move. And I don't know if it's going to be either trading up in the draft, because I don't see a quarterback falling to them at, I think, pick 12, or it's getting Deshaun Watson, unless they believe Carson Wentz could be the answer, or Sam Darnold, but that seems like a long shot, and that wouldn't seem like a very 49ers thing to do. So I would think they'd be pursuing Deshaun Watson just by process of elimination. I mean, I think that's really their best and maybe only option at this point.
Yeah, and you mentioned Carson Wentz. When we're discussing where he's going to go, I think his cap was only at like $10 million for the 2021 season, so he's definitely not as high up as Deshaun Watson. But one of my favorite analysts on, I can't even think of his name, but on ESPN, he's saying that he thinks Wentz should go to the Patriots and that Bill Belichick will be able to give him more of a leadership role. But right now the Colts and the Bears are two primary bidders for where Carson Wentz should go. So do you think that Wentz would fit in with either the Colts or the Bears?
First of all, I don't know why Carson Wentz like sucked this past season. Like, I can't think of a quarter or okay. There probably are quarterbacks that played worse, but he was just so bad. Not dynamic at all. One thing I find kind of interesting is the Bears, didn't they draft Trubisky before Wentz? Weren't they in the same draft class? So why would the Bears want to draft Wentz after they wanted Trubisky first? Like, does Wentz really want to go play for a team that
No. Wentz was the year before. Wentz was the year before.
He was? Okay.
Yeah. <They're fine. laughs> Yeah, no, Carson Wentz, like, the dude is coming off his worst season ever in a situation where he wasn't getting helped out, and that kind of exaggerated his flaws in his game, and he didn't really have a great coach to coach him up during the season. Like, they didn't fix his quarterback mechanics at all, and that was a big part of why he was missing on throws that he should be making. And that's why I think going to the Bears, I'm not sure Matt Nagy is a guy that can necessarily coach up Carson Wentz, and I don't know if that situation is just going to be enough. Like, I don't know if they necessarily have they don't have a great O-line right now. The Eagles didn't have that, and that's a big part of also why Wentz struggled so bad last season. And also, they're losing weapons. Like, they don't have Allen Robinson is probably not coming back to Chicago. He wants to win a ring, and he said there's a good chance he takes less money to go be a wide receiver one or two on an actual contender. So I don't really see the Chicago Bears making a ton of sense, but I do think Chicago will make the move and overpay, because it seems like a very Ryan Pace thing to do, and they have just done so many things wrong to help that team out. So I think it would be the Chicago Bears. The Colts, I think the Colts have kind of like set a limit on what they're willing to pay for. I think two first-round picks is absurd, and I can't believe the Eagles are even starting negotiations with that. I think that's almost a slap in the face, especially to these a competent organization like the Colts. So I don't think the Colts would do that. I think they'd be much smarter than that and look elsewhere, maybe trade a third round pick for Sam Darnold, or maybe they go after Deshaun Watson. I don't know. But I don't see why trading. I would have a hard time giving one first round pick for Carson Wentz, let alone two. I think I would honestly struggle giving a second round pick. I'd feel a lot better giving up a third round pick and maybe other day three picks for Carson Wentz instead of multiple firsts, especially coming off his worst season. And I thought, coming into this year, he was a top 10 quarterback because of how well he was able to elevate the team around him in 2019, despite all the injuries and all the pieces that he didn't have. And then this year happened. Now I have a completely different perspective. And I think we saw a little bit more of Carson Wentz when they hired the new coach, Nick Sirianni, and the Eagles, he wouldn't commit to making Carson Wentz a starting quarterback. And he said, no, I want to be the starting quarterback or else I want out. And Carson Wentz doesn't necessarily earn that right. Like, why wouldn't you embrace the competition like a lot of other quarterbacks that are way more mature would? Like, it just didn't seem like a very franchise quarterback thing to do of Carson Wentz. And so I'm not sure he's that great of a teammate. I mean, we've had reports over the years of things coming out that Carson Wentz is not that great of a guy. And I think you're seeing a little more come to light about him. And I'm not sold that Carson Wentz is the end-all be-all. He might be a little bit overrated just because I think there are character concerns potentially at this point.
It's crazy how political and how much, like, all of, like, the first round picks and the monetary values and everything, like how much that runs the NFL, especially because I know right now I read it's because of COVID, but the quarterback cap is they're capping, like, I forgot what the name of it is, but I know that the Saints have like 100 million over whatever that cap is, so they have a ton of money to spend and everything. And so, like, sitting down and, like, looking at how much money is being thrown around and how much the players are asking for, like, it's crazy how much that dictates everything.
That's another thing, the Saints, don't they need a new quarterback?
Yeah, they do.
Well, they might be able to get Jameis Winston on a very team-friendly deal, maybe like a one-year or two-year prove-it deal, and they try him out for a season, see what he can do after a year learning under Drew Brees and learning Sean Payton's offense. So I think that's the way they would go, but they might have some options maybe at the end of the first round. Maybe if Mac Jones falls or Kyle Trask, they like those options because those guys are in a very similar mold to Drew Brees. But I would think they would stick with Jameis Winston for the year. I don't know what they're going to do, but that I would feel like that's what they're going
to
do.
Another quarterback to bring up is Dak Prescott. We had that on our notes. Do you guys think he'll get the franchise tag again?
This is such a confusing situation because we keep hearing, oh, we want to keep Dak. And then Dak wants to stay. But then they're always nowhere near close to agreeing to a new deal. They're just, and that was the report that came out this week. They're absolutely nowhere close to a new deal. So how much do you really love him? If you haven't gotten the deal done now and you're willing to franchise tag him again for $38 million and you're struggling to pay him that now, it doesn't make a ton of sense with the Cowboys. So I don't know what the hell they're doing. Okay. It's a very confusing situation. And if they really wanted to pay him, I feel like they would have done it by now. And they would have made everything. It would have made everything so much easier. But now your tensions are only boiling more and more. And if you slap him with another franchise tag, he's not going to like it. But then you're also kind of a hypocrite for paying him $38 million when he didn't want to do that in the first place.
Exactly. I feel like the franchise honestly is still trying to hold together that fan commodity and, like, following Dak, because everyone loves Dak if you're a Cowboys fan. But Troy Aikman actually stated a couple days ago that if Dak does get this franchise tag, that's going to be the end of him with the Cowboys after the season because the tensions are just going to be too high.
Oh yeah, so I got an interesting take here on the Las Vegas Raiders. Oh yeah, first of all, I think the NFL kind of missed a golden opportunity to have Super Bowl LV in LV, you know, Las Vegas. But I guess we got Tom Brady playing for the Bucks in Tampa. So that was a pretty
unfair
line. They knew it. They predicted it. That's why.
Unfair.
I don't know how long ago, but they set out these Super Bowl sites like way far in advance, like years in advance. So it's kind of a coincidence. Like, how would Goodell know 2 years ago or 5 years ago that Brady was going to sign with the Bucks? I thought he was going to the Chargers, honestly. But yeah, anyways, but getting back to the Raiders here, so the Raiders are kind of making noise in these Deshaun Watson talks here. They're thinking about making a quarterback swap, essentially Deshaun Watson for Derek Carr, and I think that'd be kind of a mistake because I don't think Derek Carr played all that bad. I was actually really impressed, especially when on the biggest stage in the two games against Kansas City, he looked phenomenal, was almost mistake free, and if they had a defense, he might have won both games, but Mahomes got the ball back with like a minute and a half and no timeouts, and he still got it, went down and made a game-winning drive to win the game. And any normal quarterback, that's a win for the Raiders, but against Mahomes, that's still a win for the Chiefs, which is insane. And so he was almost 2-0 against the Chiefs, played almost perfect football, and they're considering bringing in Deshaun Watson, and they would have to trade, I'm sure, a couple first-round picks too to get that deal done. So I think that's a situation to watch. There's a very good chance, I think, that John Gruden gets hyper aggressive and Mike Mayock, and they make a move. They want to get some buzz into the Raiders organization after a kind of a flat season, even though you had pretty good play. You had Derek Carr's best season this past year, and it still didn't turn out with a very good result. And so I could see them doing that, and I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to go for the Raiders. But also, John Gruden was on Chris Collinsworth's podcast with Richard Sherman, and him and Richard Sherman start talking, and he's like, "Oh, we got an opening over here. We would like to see you over here in the black and white, in the black and silver." And Richard Sherman's like, "Oh, I'll think about that." And he's like, "Yeah, we should get together off the pod." And then immediately the NFL fined John Gruden for tampering. So, but I don't know. I think that's something to watch. You bring in Richard Sherman. You draft a couple young defensive talents. You get Richard Sherman his Richard Sherman effect, his leadership on that defense. And you got that side of the ball covered. And then you bring back a good quarterback, whether it's Deshaun Watson or Derek Carr. I don't know. Raiders could look a little different next season. And not to mention, you got Richard Sherman's old defensive coordinator, Gus Bradley, in the building now coaching for the Raiders. So that's a little more incentive for Richard Sherman there to go to Las Vegas. So I don't know. I think that's a little interesting. And the Raiders might be willing to pay Richard Sherman a little more than everybody else, I think, because they got some cap space.
That's interesting, because then Sherman would have gone Seahawks, Niners, and then Raiders, correct? If that falls through? That's crazy, yeah. And I know I saw an interview today that Sherman only wants to play for two more years, too, after this free agent year. So
I literally just saw that. That's because how old he is. I was saying, he's getting kind of old. Isn't it time for him to retire? One thing I find a little interesting about the Raiders is I thought last season they were going to have, like, a great season. They had all these first-round picks because they traded Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack. And I thought they were going to have, like, power team, and they're just kind of, like, I don't know, it was a little disappointing. I'm not a Raiders fan, so I was like, whatever. But yeah, I think Derek Carr is getting a little old. He just came off like an injury from a few years ago. I feel like he's like just a quarterback that's like every time he gets hurt or like goes down on a tackle, I'm like, oh, did he get hurt? I don't know. I think maybe it's about his time to put down the ball soon.
After he just had arguably his best season of his career, you think he should concerned taking off the helmet? That makes no sense. That makes absolutely zero sense.
He like had really good moments in his season and then like not so good moments. Like he was very on and off. It was very like
I don't think he was the reason they almost lost to the Jets. Like I don't think that was his fault. The defensive inconsistency was a major problem for the entire season, and it was the reason why they almost beat the Chiefs, because they actually came to play that day. And then they almost lost to the Jets, and they should have lost to the Jets. So Derek Carr was far, far and away not the problem for the Raiders last season. They had much bigger issues than Derek Carr.
Yeah, and you got to take in consideration there's on seasons and off seasons, because then that makes me think about back, I think, 3 seasons ago, Aaron Rodgers didn't even make the playoffs, and he's one of the all-time best quarterbacks. So, I mean, like, you could take a losing season and just blame it on the quarterback, but then there's so many other like moving pieces to it, like Jake just said.
Very true. He's actually only 29 years old, so he has some time. But something else I thought was funny is, you know, when like you're searching stuff up on Google and it says people also ask, one of the questions is, does Derek Carr wear eyeliner?
Oh, wait, Nicole, didn't you see Derek Carr or meet him? Was he one of the people you've seen?
I did. I saw him outside of the Starbucks next to my house. But I didn't get out and get a picture with him because I was literally, I wasn't just in my pajamas. I was literally wearing a bathrobe. I was like, there's no way in hell I'm getting out of the car right now.
Oh, man. God, who goes out in a bathrobe?
I wasn't getting out of the car. I was just driving. And my sister was going to pick up the drinks.
Did you have slippers too, or just the bathrobe?
I think I had like slippers, like bathrobe, like my hair in a bun, no makeup, woke up. Like,
hi, Derek Carr.
Not a time to get a picture, even if it's a Derek Carr. If it was Russell Wilson, I probably would have got out of the car.
Yeah. She would have only gotten out of the car for like Jesus or Russell Wilson. There would have been nobody else.
Like, or Duncan Robinson, too.
Yeah.
Those three. There you go.
Yeah. I took a little picture or like a video on my phone. I was like, oh my God, it's Derek Carr. Getting in his car. He got a nice truck.
I saw this thing today, and it was like, hey, the Raiders are putting up a used car sale. They got to get rid of him. And I was like, no, poor man. Okay,
I wouldn't be surprised. Hey, I wouldn't be surprised if he was a top 10 quarterback next season. I wouldn't be surprised.
Hey, I'm writing that down on paper. He's making his prediction right now, everyone.
I know.
If
you get that right, then you'll be a genius.
Mm-hmm. Then we'll pay you money.
I'll get paid. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Wait, okay, Jake, I got a question for you. What is this $5.3 million mansion? Please explain this to me. What is that?
So we're totally shifting gears here now to the NBA. And there's a lot of NBA trade rumors going on. But Kyle Lowry put up his $5.3 million mansion up for sale. And usually when athletes do that, they're going to be on the move. And for the NFL guys, a lot of them, even the NFL stars, they're usually under contract and whatsoever. So it takes a little bit more time. Sometimes it takes over a year before they're eventually out of town and with a new team. But NBA players carry way more weight. They have way more say and way more power, and they can actually force their way out. And I wonder if Kyle Lowry secretly wants out of Toronto. Because he put the house up for sale. So when that happens, you know what's going down. And I don't think he's just simply moving somewhere else in Toronto. I think there's a good chance that we might see Kyle Lowry on the move, even whether he likes it or not. Maybe he doesn't want out of Toronto, but they're not contending this year and they want to do what's best for him and trade him to a contender. So I don't know. I think that's a situation to monitor, and Kyle Lowry could help a lot of teams out there.
I agree. I think Kyle Lowry should be on the move. I think Fred Van Fleet is just younger, better, healthier, and they play good together. They're like two good guards.
I think the GOAT, Malachi Flynn, is going to take over pretty soon anyways. So
yes, Malachi.
So I think they're trying to spare Kyle Lowry some respect, you know, and try to get him out before Malachi embarrasses him out there, maybe.
All right, Jake's a genius.
I like that prediction. Oh man, yeah. I mean, because Lowry was drafted in 2006, so he's been in the league for a long time. But when you're thinking, where do you guys think he would go? I love asking that question. Where do you think? What's your prediction?
So three main teams, I would say. So the LA Clippers, because for obvious reasons, they didn't really address point guard. In the offseason.
I don't know if they need to when you have a LeBron James on your team.
Well, I said the Clippers, but...
You said the Lakers.
No, I said the Clippers.
Didn't he say the Lakers?
He said the Clippers. Megan. I'm sorry, Nicole. I gotta side with
you. Swear I heard the Lakers.
Sorry, I did say the Clippers. Lakers, I could see him doing it, but the Lakers might actually need to do it because it seems like they could use a little rejuvenation, especially with AD kind of limping at the start of the season here. So maybe that's a move that they would like to entertain. So those are my two teams out west that I could see making the move. And then the two teams in the east, I could see wanting Kyle Lowry and addressing a big need is the Heat and the Sixers. And the Sixers, they're playing pretty good ball right now, but they're only a piece or two away from really having a shot here at making a finals run. And with the Heat, the Heat are just in I don't even know what to say about the Miami Heat and the state of that team. They just don't have the same energy that they had last season. And the underdog mentality, all motivation, it seems almost gone. And I don't know if they're going to be able to turn it around with about 50 games here to go and keeping the roster the same. So, but you don't see contenders trading, within interconference. You usually see stars going to the other conference. So I would think he probably ends up with a team in the West, but maybe Toronto, wants to make it easier for Kyle Lowry. They trade him to a better team, like maybe even the Boston Celtics, because the Boston Celtics aren't getting the production that they really wanted out of, or they were hoping to get out of Kemba Walker. So I don't know. I think that maybe Boston might be interested in Kyle Lowry's services. Miami Heat is definitely a team to watch, and Philly for sure. And then the Clippers and the Lakers.
I think out of that list, I would like to see Lowry go to the Celtics. I think the Celtics have a lot of young players. And then Jason Tatum's only like 23, 24. Jalen Brown, Kemba Walker, they're all young. I think they need someone who's experienced to kind of, because they definitely have the talent. They just don't have the experience quite yet. I think the Celtics have a bright future. I just don't know if this season is their season.
Yeah, the Celtics are a team, right now in the mix. Like there's been a ton of rumors coming out of Boston that Danny Ainge is going to make a move. We don't know what that move is going to be, and whether it's just addressing the front court, you know, going asking Cleveland for Andre Drummond and Larry Nance, maybe because they want to address the front court and that wing position, get another serviceable wing to accommodate, to help out with help Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And they got that 1-2 punch nailed down right now. Jaylen Brown is playing phenomenal. I think he's actually playing better than Jason Tatum. And Jason Tatum was my preseason MVP pick. And you still have Jason Tatum. Any given night, he can go off. And but they just haven't been getting a ton from the rest of the team. And so I think Kyle Lowry, he could be that third option where, okay, these guys are struggling right now. Kyle, we need you to step up and, you know, add 25, 30. And he's capable of doing that. We saw him doing the finals 2 years ago. So, and he's aging pretty well. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics went out and got Kyle Lowry. But I don't know if that's exactly what they're going for. They might be content with Kemba. Danny Ainge might have a little too much pride in signing Kemba and want to stick to his guns there and prove that Kemba can turn it around. I don't know. I don't think he can. I don't think he can be that reliable third option. But we'll see with the Celtics. Interesting. Well, I definitely think the Celtics are going to make a move. I mean, they're always in the NBA trade line rumors. But this year, it seems like with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum kind of peaking at the right time, it seems like they're really going to be committed, I think, this year to making a finals run. So watch the Celtics. And I think the Heat are definitely going to try to save the season somehow and try to resurrect some of that 2020 magic. So watch for the Heat to make a move too. I mean, they're rumored to make a big splash. And I kind of trusted the guys that were putting that out. But they haven't done it yet. So maybe it's Bradley Beal. Maybe it's somebody else. I don't know. But, yeah, Bradley Beal also. Still waiting on him. He doesn't want out of Washington. But Washington might have to do what's best for him and say, hey, we suck. So we're going to send you to somebody who's actually going to give you a chance at getting your first ring because we don't know how to do that. And so Bradley Beal, another guy to watch.
I don't know if the NBA decides how to trade their players with that logic, but I'd be nice if they did.
Send him to the Kings. The Kings could use some help too.
You know who? One of the topics on our little sheet was Drummond going away from or being traded from the Cavs. And I personally think he would be great on the Warriors. James Wiseman is their like main tall guy right now, but he's a rookie, so he's still taking some time to adjust. I think Drummond would be a great addition to their team. Steph is for sure holding his own. I didn't know how he was going to recover from his injury, but he is typical Steph, greatest shooter of all time. Adding Drummond would really just help their offense and their defense so much.
Yeah, Steph just had one of the best weeks of his career. He's playing really good ball right now. Maybe, I know. maybe the better ball than 2016 Steph. So I don't know how much he can carry the Warriors though.
And he's 32.
Yeah, he's aging pretty well. No, Andre Drummond. No, there's so many teams that need front court help. Like even the Clippers do. So it could be the Clippers, could be the Celtics, the Nets. A lot of people like the Net are linking Andre Drummond to the Nets. So that's something to watch for. A lot of contenders really need help in the front court. So I think somebody's going to bet. I think really aggressive for Andre Drummond.
Yeah, speaking of the Nets, I read an interview today about how Kyrie is hurt. He's hurt. He's sad. He said that his team looks average. And obviously, we talked about this before. It's their defensive play. It is not doing well at all. They've allowed 16 30-point games. I think they've scored over like 140 in a majority of their games, which, yes, that's great to have that many points, but defense wins games. So how do you guys think that their coach and their team needs to adjust to be able to make it to the playoff?
Man.
It's amazing to me. Jay can give his take, but this just popped from my brain. It's amazing to me that like James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving can be considered some of like greatest basketball players of all time. Okay, but where is their defense? They have three of the greatest. Exactly. Why isn't their defense good? They have three of the greatest players of all in the league, and their defense sucks. And that just like boggles my mind. It's weird that it's like that way. Okay, Jake, I want to hear your take.
Yeah, so obviously the Nets have a defensive problem, and they really are not committed to playing any semblance of defense in the regular season, apparently. And you have guys going off for career nights against the Nets almost every other game. Russell Westbrook, when he's dropping 40 plus on you, that's a problem. So yeah, the Nets got a real problem here. And I think they could really benefit from going out and getting somebody. I don't know exactly who that somebody needs to be, but they could certainly benefit for getting some defensive help. it's very possible though. They are just trying to, you know, kind of play like not enough. They're just trying to let the offense carry them through the regular season, and they're fine with getting like a top three seed. They don't, or top four seed. They don't care where they finish. They just want to make sure that they have a top four seed or top three seed. They get that home court advantage, at least in the first round. And then they'll really commit to start playing defense later in the season. They have 50 games to figure it out. They have a ton of time, but it's very possible. They're just trying to cruise through the regular season off of this hot shooting and the offensive talents that they all have between James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant. And then when they get to the playoffs, then they'll really sit down and commit to actually playing both sides of the ball. I don't know though. It's a pretty offensive minded staff when you think about it. I mean, Steve Nash, Mike D'Antoni, and Amari Stoudemire, those are all three heavy offensive guys, not necessarily known for their defense whatsoever. And so I don't know. It's kind of interesting what's going on in Brooklyn right now. And, you know, Kyrie Irving, he thinks everybody's out to get him, but no, we just kind of struggle with the things you say, man. And it's just Kyrie's mood swings make the Nets like a reality show. And I don't know how, I can't believe KD even was committed to joining him in Brooklyn last offseason. And so, yeah, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But yeah, no, we struggle with Kyrie. Kyrie, we struggle with you. We don't struggle.
He said, this is a message for you, Kyrie. Listen to this.
I am fine with KD now. And I used to hate KD because of he ruined the NBA, the Twitter fingers. I couldn't do it.
I loved KD.
It was almost unbelievably petty. And now now when KD looks like the adult in the room, you have a serious issue. So I don't know. The Nets, I don't know. It's not time to panic just yet. But I would like to see some form of improvement down the line here pretty soon.
Exactly. Yeah, I know the Nets right now, they're 7-1 against teams with a winning record. So it's just way too early in the season to be able to predict how they're doing the playoffs. But it looks like right now they're able to readjust to those teams who have like an aggressive offense against them, and they can still outscore them. But then once we hit the playoffs, every team's going to have a winning record. Every team's going to be good. And that's when the defense is going to have to step up. But also, speaking about KD, did you guys see the other day that he started in, I forgot what team it was against, but he started in the game, and then at halftime, he got a call and he was like, hey, you got to get out because of COVID regulations. And he just walked off the court. He just walked off and didn't play. Now he's out for COVID. So
he has COVID?
I think he came in contact with someone because he's not confirmed to have COVID, but literally they like someone came up to him and talked to him on the sidelines at halftime. And then he just walked off the court. For COVID protocols.
Yeah, no, that situation was pretty crazy. So like they tested him that day. I think it was like three different times for COVID, didn't have it. So he gets to play in the game. He's fine. He's good to go. And then he's playing in the game, and some guy that he was talking with earlier in the day came back positive for COVID. They alerted the Brooklyn Nets, and the Nets had to get KD out just out of an abundance of caution and get him out of the game. So out of context, it looked pretty stupid, but when you kind of hear the backstory to this, it makes a lot more sense. And it's just trying to prevent a COVID outbreak. And he I don't know why he really did not take it very well.
No, definitely not.
And you know, I think with them struggling so much, he realizes that he needs to be in the game. So, but yeah, he was a little too quick to call out the NBA, and for their protocols. So, but I don't know. I think it was the right move. I don't think it was like an incompetent move by the NBA. I think that was the right move.
Okay. Now I'm going to go into my next segment. You guys, I've named this segment. It's called Jake Talks About Baseball While Nicole and Megan Listen. So Jake, tell us what's going on in the MLB right now.
The main topic that I really need to get off my chest here is Trevor Bauer went to the Dodgers. I thought for sure he was going to the Mets, and then this guy Nightingale, who tweeted out, who is known notoriously for tweeting fake news, basically making the wrong prediction, the absolute dead wrong opposite prediction every time, said that he had a deal done with the Mets, and I think the very next day he signs with the Dodgers. So nicely done, Nightingale, whatever the hell his name is, but worst reporter. He like everybody was making fun of him because of how painfully wrong he has been on his like, you know, predictions/reports. So yeah, but bottom line, Trevor Bauer going to the Dodgers. And this is like, this was something so unnecessary, did not need to happen. It might ruin the balance of Major League Baseball, because now the Dodgers definitely have the edge still over the Padres. It's just going to come down to, will Trevor Bauer carry his 2020 play into 2021 across a full season? Some people call him a fraud. He's only had one good year. And I don't know, maybe it could be possible. He might not be returned to the Cy Young level play that he had back last season. And the Padres weren't really bidding for him. It was really just between Dodgers, Mets, and maybe one other team. But yeah, I'm really surprised he made the move, because he's been all about calling out the big dogs, calling out hypocrites where he sees it. He's calling out Gerrit Cole for his cheating scandal and using illegal foreign substances. And Trevor Bauer's kind of been doing the same thing, but the substance he was using was not nearly as bad as Gerrit Cole. But it just seemed like Trevor Bauer had way better morals. He was he was a much bigger competitor. He was always trying to fight for the little guy. And then he goes out, sides with the Dodgers. Totally did not see that coming whatsoever. Really disappointed. Don't have any respect now for Trevor Bauer. It's just as bad as KD going to the Warriors. Almost as bad. Not quite, but you get the gist. That's why I'm really not loving Trevor Bauer right now. And maybe I am a little bit of a salty Padres fan, but I think that's rightfully so. And I don't think there's a ton of people happy with Trevor Bauer going into LA, except for Dodger fans. So yeah, I am not very happy right now, but you know what? We'll see. We're going to come play ball this season. We're gonna see what the Padres got. They reloaded. It's a new team, so there's always hope. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Padres maybe pulled this one off this year and got the best of the Dodgers. I don't know, but yeah, it doesn't look good for the Padres with this signing. I will say that. Yeah,
I didn't realize you hated KD so much for going to the Warriors.
Well, just
Stephen A. You guys are pissed at them still.
Well, it's what's the fun in that? Like the what's kind of great about Major League Baseball is it's almost two different teams every year. And then the Dodgers kind of broke that trend for a little bit. Now I think they made it to four straight, which you really don't see. And of course they lost three of them, but they finally won this past year after getting Mookie Betts. It took three and former MVPs on one team to finally win the World Series. And that's just how crazy baseball is. The NBA is way more predictable. Obviously, when you have three supermax players on one team, odds are that team is making the finals and they have a pretty good chance of winning. And KD and Steph are two top five players in the NBA. So when you had those guys on the same team, two former MVPs, what did you expect? And sure enough, they won two out of three. Probably could have been three out of three if KD doesn't get hurt, but that's part of it. That's part of the game. You gotta be able to rest your guys and keep your stars healthy all the way to the finals. Warriors weren't able to do that his final season, and now he's with the Nets, and now he has to deal with Kyrie. I think that's kind of karma in a sense, you know. I mean, after he took the easy way out and he said he took the hardest path, which is complete BS, and everybody knows it. And now he's on the Nets in this reality show right now. So, and now he has to be the adult in the room and see how hard it is sometimes. And maybe he has to take a back seat. That would be even more hilarious. But yeah, no, I'm pretty good with KD now. It's just, I really struggled with him on the Warriors.
Okay, but in reality, like, he's winning. He got two titles.
I mean,
a smart move on his part.
Not all, I mean, you could say that. He still had to take a pay cut, and not all championships are built the same way. How many people are really recognizing KD as, you know, KD's not even being mentioned in the same conversation as LeBron James, because he's not a guy that necessarily elevates the talent around him nearly as much. And he went to the Warriors. Like, where's the integrity? Where's the competitor in him? Like, it just wasn't a great move for his legacy. And now that's why he tried to go to Brooklyn. He tried to make his own story for himself. And I don't know how it's going to work out for him there, but you know what? I just think it's funny, the turn of events now in Brooklyn.
Jake's just has some beef with them, with Kyrie and KD. Will the beef get squashed? We'll find out at the end of the NBA season.
It's just hard to even relate to some of these NBA players, because they just forced their way out and it's not realistic. And they have so much say now in the NBA more than ever. And it's just like, it's like they're not even trying. They're just like, if they don't get every single demand on out of like the million demands that they out of the millions of needs they have, then you know they're allowed to throw a fit publicly at a press conference multiple times, and they can say as many derogatory things as they want as long as it's not about the NBA's front office, and they get away with it essentially. So it's just hard for the common fan, the common man, to resonate with NBA players. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, well, we're going to keep paying attention to what's happening, all the trade movements with the NBA and the NFL offseason. A lot of stuff's happening there. I want to talk about next week, especially free agent talk and the draft coming up. But other than that, that's all we have today for episode 8 of the Huddle Up podcast. Once again, you guys can follow me on Instagram at mtownsley with two Y's or on Twitter at Megan S. Townsley, which still to this day, you guys, because I haven't opened it again, has 2 followers. Thank you, Jake and Nicole.
You're welcome. Go follow me at Nick Time for Sports.
Yeah, go ahead. Give me the follow as well. I prefer the Twitter, much easier there. And, you know, send me your questions as well. Still waiting for some of those. And yeah, we'll be more than happy to answer those. So yeah, give me the follow on Twitter at JakeBurton419. On Instagram, if you're really feeling that, I prefer Twitter though. Same as Twitter at JakeBurton419. Yeah, so looking forward to those questions.
Awesome. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next week.